Last week, we had studied about the canon of the New Testament, the list of books that people have accepted as being inspired of God, and the reasons why those books are selected. What I wanted to do today, I did not finish last week. We talked about basically the ones that were more easy to talk about, the ones that were obviously written by apostles or written by someone who knew the apostles, by one of the prophets that were associated with the apostles. In fact, if you look at all the early debates that were over some of the writings, most of these books were at first accepted, and then 200-300 years later, people started saying, well, wait a minute, why is that book in there? And started coming up with arguments about maybe this really wasn't what everybody claimed to be. But the acceptance of the book, the criteria for the most part was it written by an apostle? Was it written by someone associated with an apostle? And that was basically the primary criteria. Now, the books that we haven't covered yet, the ones that are a little more difficult, the first one we're going to talk about is Jude. Jude is, if you read the book, you can see why there's some debate about it, because its content is written a little bit different from the rest of the New Testament. It actually quotes some things that and mentions things that are not found in the Bible, in the rest of the Bible. And so you can say that, well, there's some debate about some of the things are by the content-wise about Jude. But what's interesting is Jude's always been quoted. There's not a lack of documentation that the fact that Jude existed in early writings. In fact, one source that I looked up by Brent McDonald, called the New Testament Books of James and Jude, he said early church work appears to echo its contents. You can find it in a dictionary, the greetings with Polycarp's epistle to the Philippians. The martyrdom of Polycarp are similar to that of Jude. Clement of Alexandria refers to Jude in his book called The Instructor. I can't pronounce the Greek word for it. The one of Miscellaneous, also he had written a multi-volume one. Hippotapetus also wrote a multi-volume commentary very early on in the church. He refers to the book of Jude. Likewise, Tertullian, who lived about 155 to 222 AD in North Africa, also shows that the people in North Africa were familiar with Jude. There are a number of quotes, a number of allusions to it, a number of outright quotes of Jude. One example of it is up on the board. It's called the Canon of the Maturian, or Canon Maturitius. It says, the epistle of Jude indeed, and the two belonging to the above-named John, or bearing the name of John, are reckoned among the Catholic epistles. Now, Catholic, be careful when you read some of these quotes. Catholic doesn't refer to the Roman Catholic Church. The old word for universal was Catholic. And so what it's saying, and that's what the Roman Catholic means, the universal church. What they're saying here is it was a general epistle. It was a universal epistle. It wasn't assigned or directed to a particular group of people. The last several books in our New Testament are general epistles in that sense. But this list, the canon, Maturianus, was written about 175 AD. So we're not talking that far off from when the New Testament was written. And it mentions, you know, that Jude is one of the books that were accepted. The difficulty that we have with it is actually the author. If you really come down to where most of the debates, and like I said, most of the books is based on who wrote it. The problem is, it says Jude, the brother of James. Which Jude? See, Jude happens to be a very, very, very common name at this time in the Palestine area. There are a lot of people named Jude. In fact, there are multiple Judes in the New Testament. There's Judas Iscariot. There's Judas, who's also called Thaddeus, who's possibly the brother of James, the son of Alphaeus, maybe the son of James, the son of Alphaeus, who is mentioned in Matthew 10:3 and Luke 6:16 and Acts 1:13. There's also a Jude who's the brother of James, who are both half-brothers of Jesus. In Matthew 13:55. And so when they start saying, okay, it's Jude. And there's some other Judas, Jude as well. Jude, by the way, is just a shorthand for Judas. And so there are a number of Judes mentioned. And then so when we look at it, we say, well, which Jude? Because it makes a difference about whether it's accepted or not. Now, in the camp of those who say it is Jude, who's the son of Joseph, who is the brother of James and half-brother of Jesus, we do have some quotes. You know, the early Christians were not consistent in who they attributed to. One is Clement of Alexandria. He says, Jude, who wrote the Catholic epistle, the brother of the sons of Joseph, and very religious, whilst knowing the near relationship of the Lord, yet did say that he himself was his brother. Did not say he was a brother. But what did he say? Jude, a servant of Jesus Christ, of him as Lord, but brother of James. For this is true, he was brother, the son of Joseph. And so Clement, who wrote, probably about maybe 100 years after Jude was written, basically decided that it had to be the brother of James. And explains that's why the introduction emphasizes that he's a servant of Jesus, but a brother of James. Another quote then comes from Cyril of Jerusalem. He says, then of the New Testament there are four Gospels. Only for the rest have fallen. Rest have false titles and are mischievous. The Manichaeans also wrote a gospel according to Thomas, which has been tinctured with the fragrance of the evangelical title, corrupts the sound of the simple sort. Receive also the Acts of the 12 Apostles, and in addition to these, the seven Catholic epistles of James, Peter, John, and Jude, and as a seal upon them all, and the last work of the disciples, the 14 epistles of Paul, yet let all rest and be put aside in secondary rank. So again, here's another one that gives a list of the scriptures. This one comes from back in 300. But again, he lists the books that are accepted. Now, one thing that's noted by many of these authors is in Jude 17 and 18. So if you would go to that passage, Jude, verses 17 and 18, it says, but you, beloved, ought to remember the words which were spoken beforehand by the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ, that they were saying to you, in the last time there will be mockers following after their own ungodly lusts. Now, notice how it's written. Remember the words were spoken hand by the apostles, as if they were a different group than who Jude is. That's one way it could be written. But notice it says, they say to you, and not they say to us. And so depending on how you read it, it could be saying that Jude's saying he is among the apostles. Or you could be saying that Jude's saying he's not among the apostles, but the apostles wrote this. And so there's a big debate that comes because of that. And because of that, there are some people that then say that place makes Jude the son of Alphaeus, the brother of James, who's of Alphaeus. And the other relationships that talk about James and Jude of Alphaeus as then brother instead of son of. So in that camp, we find Origen. Let's see, oops. Yeah, I got Origen on the board. We find Origen. It says, we have now to notice, agreeably to the statements of the Scriptures, how the opposing powers or the devil himself contends with the human race, inciting and investigating men to sin. And in the first place, in the book of Genesis, the serpent is described as being seduced, having seduced Eve, regarding whom in the work entitled The Ascension of Moses, a little treatise, of which the Apostle Jude makes mention of in his epistle, the archangel Michael, when disputing with the devil regarding the body of Moses, says that the serpent, being inspired by the devil, has caused Adam and Eve's sin. And so he mentions Jude. Origen is of the opinion that it's Jude the Apostle who wrote this. Tertullian also argued for the acceptance of the Book of Enoch because Jude seems to refer to the Book of Enoch. At least Tertullian says, to these considerations is added the fact that Enoch possesses a testimony in the Apostle Jude. That's not necessarily true, but that's what Tertullian was trying to argue. He wanted the Book of Enoch accepted as well. It's rejected for other reasons. We'll talk about why. But both of these men basically said, well, it's Jude who's the Apostle Jude, who had a brother named James. Given the importance of apostleship to the early Christians, it makes sense that we refer to Jude, the brother of James, the son of Alphaeus. But it could also be James, the Lord's brother, and he was an apostle, a prophet. Both of them make sense. Neither one undermines what's written in the book. And as far as the consistency of the book with the rest of the Bible, it is consistent. It has some things that are unusual, some things are not mentioned in the other parts of the Bible, but everything that is mentioned is perfectly consistent. And we also, one other last thing we also note is at the beginning of Jude, in Jude verse 1, it says, Jude, a bondservant of Jesus Christ. That phrase, a bondservant, is a phrase favored by the apostles, though it's not limited to them. We find Paul calling himself a bondservant of Christ in Romans 1 verse 1. Peter uses it in 2 Peter 1 verse 1. John uses it in Revelation 1 verse 1. So a lot of the apostles refer to themselves as a bondservant. So, but like I said, whether we'd say, okay, this is Jude, one of the Judes who's the apostle, or if this is Jude who's the half-brother of Jesus, it doesn't change the content, and it doesn't change the acceptance of the book either. The book of James also caused similar type of debates, because, again, there are multiple James in the Bible. Again, from this writer, Brent McDonald, he says, a number of writings, early church fathers were aware of the books and quoted it from their works. Two of the earliest in the generation following the apostles were Clement of Rome, in his first letter to the Corinthians, where he references James chapter 2, verses 21 and 23, and the author of the Shepherd of Hymenaeus makes reference of James 4, verse 7. Origen, approximately a century later, living about 185 to 254 AD, expressly mentions the book in his commentary on John. And Irenaeus makes reference to a verse from it as well in James 2, verse 23. So again, like Jude, we find early Christians citing the book as scripture. Very heavy, heavy usage of that. So we find that it was early on accepted. And again, we have James calling himself a bondservant, which would incline us to say maybe possibly this is an apostle. Yet again, we have multiple James. We got James, the brother of John, the sons of Alphaeus, Zebedee. We got James, who may be the brother of Jude, depending on how you read the Greek, who's the sons of Alphaeus. There is also James, who had a brother named Jude, who was half-brother to Jesus. All those fit. James, who's the son of Zebedee, however, was killed in Acts chapter 2, or 12, verse 2. Acts chapter 12, and in verse 2. He said, he had James, the brother John, put to death with a sword. And so most people look at that and immediately say, okay, we rule out James, that James, the apostle James, the son of Zebedee. That's one possibility. The problem is, then you have to assume when the book of James was actually written. There is still a remote possibility is within the lifetime of James, the son of Zebedee. James, son of Alphaeus, is always called such up until James, the son of Zebedee's death, and afterwards he's just called James, which makes sense. They usually use a qualifier to distinguish two people who have the same name. And it looks like probably James, the son of Alphaeus, who's the brother of Jude, is probably the best one of the group to be attributed to. And it's also possible it's James who's the Lord's brother. But then that would be, again, based on the fact that James, the Lord's brother, would have been a prophet. But all the, again, no matter who you want to claim is the author, it doesn't change the fact that it is either we believe it's an apostle or someone who's strongly connected with the apostles and were prophets in the church. And again, that's why the book was accepted. It's been used. It's strongly associated in one way or another, depending on which camp you are. You're still arguing that it's strongly associated. And again, the book's consistent with the rest of the Bible. And that actually then just leaves us the book of Hebrews that's debated. Again, it's been quoted very early on. Very early Christian writers quote it quite a bit. And the debate here is because this book doesn't name the author. There's a couple other ones. The Gospels are that way. But everybody says who the author is, so that's how we know them. But this particular book doesn't name who the author is. But there are hints in the book. If we look at Hebrews chapter 2 and verses 3 and 4, it says, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? After it was first spoken through the Lord, it was confirmed to us by those who heard, God also testifying with them, both by signs and wonders and various miracles and by gifts of the Holy Spirit according to his will. Now notice that the way this is worded, the author indicates he's not a direct witness to the Jesus' life on earth. In other words, the author is not one of the original 12. He says the other ones were the witnesses of his life on earth. In Hebrews chapter 13 and in verse 23, so take notice that our brother Timothy has been released, with whom, if he comes, I will see you. Greet all of your leaders and all the saints. Those from Italy greet you. And we are told then that this book is written from Italy by someone who is an associate of Timothy. In chapter 10 and in verse 34, says, for you who show sympathy to the prisoners and accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and a lasting one. And then also in chapter 13 and in verse 19, says, and I urge you all the more to do this so that I may be restored to you sooner. The indication here is that the author is in prison, and that he hopes to visit soon. The author also shows a really strong knowledge of the Hebrew religion, because it's written to Hebrews about the religion and its change of the laws. One other point that should be made is that a number of the early copies of Hebrews that we have are in a packet of letters that basically are Paul's letters, of which then Hebrews was one of them. And it's not that Hebrews was attached to the end. It's in the middle of the packet. And so it was circulated as one of Paul's letters. And so we get early Christians and their thoughts on it, and they said, if I gave an opinion, his origin, I should say that the thoughts are those of the apostle, talking about Paul. But the diction and phraseology are those of someone who remembered the apostolic teachings and wrote down at his leisure what had been said by his teacher. Therefore, if any church holds this epistle as by Paul, let him be commended for this. For not without reason have the ancients handed it down as Paul. But who wrote the epistle in truth, God knows. He basically is saying, you know, the wording's different from what Paul normally writes, is what he's saying. But he says, hey, everybody's always said it was Paul's. That's what he's been told. And it looks like Paul's. The logic, the style of, you know, the style of argumentation is like Paul's. He just says the wording's just not quite the way Paul normally words things. Pantheus, in his third-hand quote, says, and as the blessed presbyter Pantheus used to say, since the Lord, as being the apostle of the Almighty, was sent to the Hebrews, Paul, through his modesty, inasmuch as he was sent to the Gentiles, does not ascribe himself apostle to the Hebrews, both on the account of the honor due to the Lord and because it was the work of supererogation that he addressed as epistle to the Hebrews, also since he was a herald and apostle to the Gentiles. He basically says the reason why Paul didn't put his name on it is addressed to the Jews, but Paul is supposed to be the apostle to the Gentiles. And so out of that fact, he wanted to write a letter, but he didn't want to put his name on it for that fact. Clement has an interesting idea of that too. This one's quoted by Eusebius. Yeah, can't get it out today. But he says, in the Hypotheses, in a brief summary, he made an abbreviated narrative of all the canonical scriptures and has not passed over the disputed books. I mean Jude and the rest of the Catholic epistles and Barnabas and the so-called Revelation, the Apocalypse of Peter. He says of the epistles to the Hebrews is Paul's. It was written to the Hebrews in the Hebrew language, but that Luke, being carefully translated, it gave it to the Greeks, and hence the same coloring of the expressions is discoverable in this epistle and in the Acts, and that the name Paul an apostle was very properly not prefixed for it. He says that the writings to the Hebrews, who were prejudiced against him and suspected he was great wisdom, did not repel them in the beginning by putting down his name. Basically, Paul says, because of his reputation among the Hebrews, he wanted them to actually read the book. And since he already had a bad reputation among the Hebrews, he didn't want his name directly on there where they would just outright reject the book firsthand. The explanation of why it has a different slight wording, he said, well, written originally in Hebrew. And then Luke translated, and we have Luke's translation of what Paul originally wrote. That's a possibility. That would explain Origen's misgivings about the differences in phrasing, the word choices being other than Paul's in other works. One other author notes that the word choices in Hebrews does match the word choices in Luke and Acts real well. So possibly that's what how it came about. We don't know for sure. Tertullian states that Barnabas was the scribe who wrote down the words of Paul. In fact, Tertullian quotes Hebrews 6, 4 through 8, but calls the epistle of Barnabas, though he says it contained the words of Paul. And so he was the idea that Barnabas was in the scribe for this. But even though the author remains uncertain, what is significant is that the only candidate that's ever offered for the writer of Hebrews is Paul. They debate about whether it really is Paul, but when it comes down to it, they all say it's Paul. They say Barnabas wrote what Paul said. They say Luke wrote what Paul said. But it comes down to is always Paul. It's always what's circulated as Paul. It's always been known as Paul's. Every once in a while, I slip out and say it's probably Paul's because of some of the hints that's in Hebrews. I see no other, companion of Timothy in prison in Italy. It matches Paul very well. And that's why it's in our Bibles, because it's basically accepted as one of Paul's works. In fact, when we reach the end, we find that every book in the New Testament is either written by an apostle or by someone closely associated with an apostle who is known to be a prophet. Even the books that we are not certain about the identity of the author today still is in some way associated with the apostles. And the early church accepted the writings because of the author. That's really the criteria. When you read back at the early church, what they looked for, they used Moses' standard. They looked to see, did the author who wrote it, was a prophet of God? Were they someone authorized by God to write? As with the Old Testament, the books in our Bible were not set by some council. They were not set by some historian sitting in judgment on God's word. These were people that looked at and said, yes, this person wrote this book. That's why we accept it. And later historians accepted basically what Christians already knew. The reason for going through this is one of the arguments that the Roman Catholic Church uses. They'll basically say, well, who decided what books went in the Bible? And they want to say, basically, it was their council that was held in AD 430-something as the one who decided what books were in. No. If you actually read the transcript of the council did not decide what books were in there. The council said, these are the books that have always been accepted, and this is the set we're going to use, because people were pushing additional books in. And they just basically wrote down, no, these are the ones we've always accepted. They didn't decide on the books. They were acknowledging what was already done. And as we look through history, the books from the time they're written have always been circulated as the works of the apostles and prophets. And that's why they're in our Bibles. Now, there are other books. We're going to talk about them. I don't know exactly when, but I'm planning to talk about them as why we don't have those books, because they come up all the time. People keep recirculating them, keep bringing them back up, and there's good reasons why they're rejected. I also want to go through one other one, but I'm still working my way through some of the material. I got some hold of some really good material about proof that basically the Gospels were eyewitness accounts. That they had to be written by people who actually were there. And so I'm still working my way through a thick book, so I'll give you a summary of it. It won't be a long sermon. But anyway, for today, though, we'd like to offer an opportunity, like we always do when we're gathered together, that if there's anyone here who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. If there's anyone who is a child of God, would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the psalm of the selected.